Hey, this is Joey Santiago from the Pixies. We're on tour, and you're listening to The Vinyl Guide with Nate Doyer.
Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for fans and collectors of vinyl records. And guess what, gang? This week we are having a discussion with none other than Joey Santiago of the Pixies. That's right. This week the Pixies kick off the final leg of their 2017 tour, and we celebrate this by having a discussion with Joey about the early days of the band, the records they recorded, his approach to music, his unique style of playing guitar, the new LP head carrier, and much, much more. And if you want to see the Pixies live, but weren't able to get tickets to these final 2017 shows, don't despair. They just announced a 2018 tour with Weezer. You can check out the dates at pixiesmusic.com. And to preview what you're going to hear at the show, I'm going to play a track from their new LP head carrier directly after the interview. This week's episode is brought to you by Voyage Air Guitars. Guitar players, take a look at the design and the construction of the Voyage Air guitar, designed for portability and built for quality. Check them out at voyageairguitar.com. And with that, let's get on to our interview with Joey Santiago of the Pixies.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
All righty, well, the music's on. So is the microphone. Check one, two, check one, two. Hi, everyone. It's Nate, host of The Vinyl Guide. This podcast for fans and collectors of vinyl records, where we talk weekly to artists and artisans behind the music, hear the stories behind the records we all love and collect. I hope you're well. We are now clearly officially into the holidays head first. I hope you Americanos had a nice Thanksgiving last week and didn't trample each other to death while shopping on Black Friday. God, it gets crazy. And I hope you guys had a chance to enjoy some of the Record Store Day Black Friday releases. I saw lots of pictures from the Vinyl Guide listeners and the Vinyl Guide community, facebook.com/vinylguide and instagram.com/vinylguide. Lots of Record Store Day Black Friday loot. Many of you getting that new Daryl DMC McDaniels EP. He was on the show last week talking about Back from the Dead, The Legend Lives. The release from Daryl DMC McDaniels from Run DMC fame. That EP, by the way, is totally sold out. You cannot find one of those without paying double the price of what it went for on Record Store Day. There were only 4,000 of those records made, scattered around the earth, and they've all been swapped up. So hopefully you were able to get one of those and many others. Last week, Daryl was on the show, and we played part of a track from that EP. If you missed it, you want to hear a conversation with DMC about the early days of Run DMC, the records that influenced him, how the band came together, the phenomenal rise of the Raising Hell LP, make sure you go back and hear last week's episode at thevinylguide.com. Now, if you've been collecting records for any length of time, you probably already have some record labels, some companies that you follow more than others. For instance, I listen to a lot of Blue Note Records. I like Impulse Records. Just about anything on Third Man or Light in the Attic, I tend to enjoy. And I attribute that to the people who are running and managing the labels in the catalog really having good taste. Quite often, I'll buy releases from those labels completely sight unseen. Just I know if they've put their label on it, I enjoy it. So I wanted to quickly call out another label that I just discovered and you should probably know about. It's called Run Out Groove Records. I think they're at runoutgroovevinyl.com. By the way, I'm not getting a dime for this. I'm just passing on some information. Each month, they press one title, and it's the title that people online can vote for. So you can go there right now, and there's three titles up there, and you can choose which one of the titles that you would like to see pressed up. And the most votes becomes the record that they press the following month. And then you can go and pre-order it. And the number of people that pre-order these things, they print exactly that number of copies. So let's say if 3,212 people pre-order this one particular title, they're only going to press 3,212 copies. So it's pretty unique, and they sound phenomenal. I just got a couple of records from them. One of them was the highlights of the Funhouse sessions from the Stooges. Mm. These are outtakes from the Stooges Funhouse recording sessions, and it sounds gorgeous. It's a beautiful record package. God, it is great. As soon as I got it, I listened to it like 3 times in a row. It's a double album, right? So it was just, you know, back to front, back to front, back to front. I love this album. I can't stop talking about it. Highlights from the Funhouse Sessions by the Stooges. They also recently just put out an album from the Secret Machines. Now Here Is Nowhere. Again, this is a record that wasn't issued initially, or maybe it was issued in Europe or, you know, very limited numbers, and it really is a fantastic record. So I'm finding that a lot of the records and the product that comes out of Run Out Groove Vinyl is really, really great. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Run Out Groove Vinyl, if you're listening to this, you guys rock. Keep putting out that great stuff. I want to check out this new Dream Syndicate LP that they have and some other stuff they have coming up. So anyway, there you go. There's my record tip for the day, runoutgroovevinyl.com. All right, so let's get on to this week's show. This week we have a conversation with Joey Santiago of the Pixies. And for those of you who know Joey's work, this is huge. Joey is perhaps one of the most unique guitarists on the stage today. I mean, his approach to the instrument is very unique, very interesting, and really such an unmistakable part of the Pixies sound. Now, you may remember a few weeks back, I had Paz Lechantaine of Pixies on the show, episode 97, if you want to go back and hear. We had a great conversation. I spoke to Joey and Paz really, you know, on the same day several weeks ago. However, Joey's interview needed a lot of time to clean up. He was on a mobile phone somewhere in the middle of Minnesota, and we had a good conversation, but the sound quality was kind of iffy. And as you know, I'm a vinyl nerd. I'm a huge stickler for sound quality. But several of you wrote in and really wanted to hear this Joey interview. So I spent quite a few evenings, cleaned up this interview as best as possible, and I think it came out pretty good. So now, Joey is such a nice guy. We talked about a heap of things, like his early days, the start with the Pixies, how they do their recording and songwriting, the records they made. We talked about their new LP Head Carrier, and of course, what's up for 2018. Now, the Pixies are just about to kick off the final leg of their 2017 shows, mostly up and down the West Coast between now and the end of December. And most of these shows are sold out. However, if you did not get a ticket, don't worry, they just announced a heap of new shows with Weezer in 2018. What a double bill. That is awesome. So check them out at facebook.com/pixiesofficial. You can check out their tour dates and, of course, pick up a copy of the new album Head Carrier. Now, I'm going to be playing the title track from the Head Carrier LP directly after this interview. It's a great album. Make sure you pick one up for yourself. And here we go. Let's get started with our interview with Joey Santiago of the Pixies. Today on The Vinyl Guide, we're very excited. We have on the show Joey Santiago, guitarist, founding member of Pixies. Are you doing okay today, Joey?
I'm doing good. I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota.
St. Paul, Minnesota. Is it cold up there?
It's cold for me, for Los Angelino.
Yeah, I originally come from California, and I tell my friend, I'm a California weather wimp. You know, anything that's below 50 degrees, and yeah.
That's it. I am. I'm passing a guy with a T-shirt, and I got a parka on. Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, hopefully you won't catch a cold. Now, Joey, you're coming off this incredibly successful world tour. The album Head Carrier has been unilaterally accepted by fans. 30 years ago, you and Black Francis were jamming together in a dorm room. What was your original goal back then?
To do this, to travel the world. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know, initially it was, that's it. You know, ever since we got you know, as a kid, you know, when I bought an amplifier, it wasn't just going to be for me anymore. You know, it was going to be loud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Charles and I definitely. I mean, when we dropped out of college, you know, so that's you know.
The level of success you have now, that's what you envisioned as youth. You were that optimistic that what you had was so special that it would lead you to where you're at today?
Say that again one more time, that it was the level of...
Was the original goal to just play some gigs, to get some recordings out there, or was it truly to conquer the world?
Oh, well, I don't know if conquer, but you have to travel the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we initially just went to Boston because it was... close and manageable city, and it had a good music scene. Oh God, I'm just waking up. I hope I'm answering your questions.
It's all right. Let's go back a little bit. Growing up, what part did music play in your life?
Oh, pretty big part. I listened to a lot of records. I had an older brother that was. Older than me, 7 years older than me. And he had a good collection of records, you know. He was a pothead, so he had a good collection.
Oh, it's so important to have those older siblings that pass you down those records full of full of seeds and everything. What sort of records do you remember having around the house?
Well... aside from my mother buying those compilations, and that was great, you know, it was a double album that went through the one side, the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it stopped there because, it wasn't, we were still in the 70s, but... yeah, I mean, I got a basic history and how the sound evolved, you know. So, and then went to my brother's collection, listened to Velvet Underground. you know, even Weather Report, which I didn't get at the time at all. But I was just rifling through his stuff. I went to the public library. I was... had a paper route, and all I bought was records when I got paid. That's it.
Do you remember a record or two that were really, really formative for you? Like the ones where you said, wow, this is something that is uniquely mine?
Oh, well, all right. I came from a little town, you know. So everybody seemed to be in the same... wavelength, you know. I mean, I love the Who and the Stones and stuff and all that stuff, but they thought I was some kind of rebel when I started getting into AC/DC. You know.
Yep.
I know. You're from Australia, right? Australia?
Absolutely, yeah. They're absolute heroes here, yeah.
Okay, no, the interview's from Australia. Yeah. So, you know, I sound kind of like... that and the Velvet Underground really was what did it. You know, they're a musician's kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're gonna delve into it, you will have to listen to that. Or you know, if you're gonna go to a certain genre of music, that's what you're gonna get into. And no one in my town was into that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, very preppy town.
Okay, so when you started listening to things like Velvet Underground, AC/DC, and the like, that was completely off their radar.
Yeah, and Iggy Pop and all that stuff. It was totally off their radar. And, you know, I don't know if I rebelled or I just evolved into listening to something that's different, you know, that's just different.
Could you find those records?
And those albums, too, it's something I can, you know, I could imagine doing in a band, you know. Whereas, yeah, I could totally imagine that, you know.
And were you playing guitar at this time, or did those records take you from listener to participant?
Oh, listener to participant, definitely. Yeah. And then when I decided to listen to AC/DC, I was already dabbling in the acoustic guitar, and that's when I decided to take it up a notch. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw them live. That's what happened. This is it. I saw them live, the Back in Black concert, my first concert ever. And then I said, there's another aspect of music that is cool, and that's live music. And I have to do this.
Now, when you were going to, I think, University in Massachusetts, what was your plan for a career? I mean, obviously, you had the music that you were still working with, but did you have a backup plan?
No. It was just because it was, I went by the credo. I think Charles's father handed it over to us, is that if you have a plan B, you don't have a plan.
Mm.
See that? That's a word of wisdom right there.
That's right. You guys were jumping off a cliff and building an airplane on the way down.
Yes, exactly.
So once you started getting some music together, did it feel that you had something unique right off the bat, or did it take a while to evolve and to really find the space between you and Charles to make that music?
We did some trial and errors. He was writing songs and he was chucking them aside. That's what I knew was getting serious, when you could just toss stuff aside and be honest with yourself. Like, this isn't us. This isn't, I mean, there were good songs, but it wasn't like what we were trying to, do. It was a very careful process. Did we find a sound right away? Yeah, I guess for me, it was my limitations that I decided to embrace. Mm-hmm. and just start there. And lo and behold, you know, it's that simple. You know, my style is really simple, and it's fine. I didn't have to play so many notes per hour. And there were a lot of other bands that were doing that. You know, it doesn't have to be so complicated.
I've read that when the band records the tracks, you're the last one to record. And Charles says, you know, you're the person that makes the recording sound like Pixies, which is a great compliment. Does the band really record in those sort of layers, or are you brought into the fold earlier to help shape the songs from the beginning?
Well, you know, Charles will show me the chords first. I think it's because he probably knows I get very nervous. And sometimes I'll come up with something really quickly. Yeah, a lot of times I will, and then it'll start changing there, you know, and other times it won't. Other times I'll be the last guy, and I will be the last guy. It doesn't mean that I don't have the parts yet. I will have them 80% of the time, but it's just the way it is. It's just the last piece of the puzzle, because everything has to be in tune. The lyrics, and then I gotta find the actual holes in them, because it's we're rearranging the verses, chorus, and bridges as we go along, and you never know what's gonna go on. Plus, there's a lot of guitar changes that has to happen. There's a lot of specific sounds we're going for, mm-hmm. and you know, we want to make sure that the vocals are right. You know, because that is one of the most important things. And then, when I put my stuff down, it'll start evolving into that sound. You know, I am one of the members, you know.
Of course. But, you know, with a songwriter like Charles, and for instance, the lyrics, they must be uniquely Charles. Do you ever comment on them? Do you suggest things, or do you just pretty much let him run with it?
I just let him run with it. Just as he would let me run with the guitar. Everyone has their specific things, and it's good. You know, we just, to this day, we let everyone do their job, you know, from the people that do, from Von Oliver that does our artwork. It's like he wants a suggestion, and we say we don't give him any, you know. It's more pressure, too, if you have a big avenue to work with rather than a specific thing. It gets confusing after, for me anyways, once we start honing down on something, because I'll have my own idea, you know.
Going into a project like Head Carrier, is there an approach or a vision for the record, or is it evolving over the course of the recording?
Initially, when we were recording it, I planted an idea that we should just go acoustic and mirror electric. And, you know, I said that so we could have this idea that we're going to be bare bones again. So, you know, just a tough, tough record. And that's what we really wanted to make. Something just like, you know, no bullshit on anything.
With the expectations of recording something like Head Carrier, you know, as opposed to when you went in to record Surfer Rosa or Doolittle, is the pressure different, or do you feel pretty confident in a similar way that you did for those other records?
Well, there is a certain level of comfort now that we've have this style, but there's always pressure on every recording. You know, Surfer Rosa had its own unique one. Definitely Doolittle. Definitely all the records from there on had it had that certain amount of pressure of, you know, we just don't want to suck, you know?
Yeah, because whatever you make is going to live forever. So, you know, you want to give it everything at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Pixies became massive in the UK and Europe before popping up on the radar in the United States. What do you credit that to?
I would credit that to a lot of things. One of it is our label was from England, is an English based. So they knew they had rapport with a lot of people there that could help us, you know, the clubs, the media. But the one that really, I would say, the biggest one I would give kudos to is John Peel.
Mm-hmm.
You know that guy, right?
Yeah,
you must know that guy.
Yeah, DJ.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just getting invited to the John Peel sessions was just like, it's broadcast, and he's known all over Europe as the guy that vets bands, you know. Not everyone gets to play on a John Peel session. So when that started happening for us, I mean, that took us to another level, definitely. But John Peel, yeah.
Now, when you guys got started, of course, you know, MTV was out and people were looking for bands not only musically but visually as well. But you guys have never been driven by any sort of fashion. Was there a time early on when you guys spoke about having a look or coordinate or anything like that, or did that never really enter the picture?
Nope. Not until my daughter turned into a teenager did she say, you guys don't have a look. You guys should start having outfits. But no. We don't. I dress up. Now I'm dressing up because it's a habit. I don't feel ready if I'm wearing street clothes anymore. You know, so I just put on a vest, a shirt, like a suit thing, and I feel comfortable with that, you know. I might start wearing suspenders. But everyone looks different. I think that's part of the charm, is, you know, it looks like we don't give a shit. And we don't, really. There's plenty of other bands that have a style, so I think the kids could relate to that, too. You know, we're just being honest with ourselves, you know.
Absolutely. Now, when you guys are playing live, there's no set list. In fact, Charles calls out the songs on stage, and you guys are just as surprised, I guess, as the audience to hear what's next. How many songs do you have to prepare to go out on tour?
Well, you know, word has it we have 90. And and we can call up upon any of those songs. But we've narrowed down to a master list of like maybe 55, 60, mm-hmm. you know. So, and it's different every night. And it's great. I can't imagine having a set list now. I just can't. It used to get in the early days. We would, one of us, usually me, would think, go off the list. Like, I wouldn't know where we are. I'm sick of looking down on the paper anyway. I can't imagine looking down at a schedule for the set.
Does he ever give you a bit of a heads up that, all right, tonight I may be pulling out this really rare one, or it's all at the...
Yeah. He would say, we would suggest things. It's like, why don't we do this? You know, and there's one song that I'm having problems with, and I want to keep doing it, you know, until it's right, because it is good. It takes a while for it to evolve into a live beast.
So I imagine you're using all standard tunings. Otherwise, you'd have to have, you know, all sorts of guitars waiting for you, you know, depending on what song gets called.
No. I'd have different tunings. I'd have I drop down. Yeah, mine is just dropping down. I drop down to a D. One song I drop down to a C sharp, you know, on the E. That's it. You know, those are easy to do on the fly, but I have to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a great guitar tech, one of the best. So he's always ready with a guitar that's already dropped. And I rarely start a song. So, you know, there's probably two of them I start, and it has to be tuned right away. And Charles will know that. There'll be an extended outro, and that's when I could kind of start changing the guitar. You know, he'll give the guitar tech a heads up so my guitar is ready.
Okay. The musicians aren't the only ones that are waiting to find out what's happening.
Sometimes Dave would start the damn song before I'm even ready.
That's exhilarating. So now you have 30 years on from the dorm room. You're in a different space professionally and personally. How has your music taste evolved?
Well, I'm listening to a lot of experimental music, or you know, it's getting broader. In a sense that I'm listening to like Steve Reich now, Moondog, a lot of jazz, anything really, you know, anything that's kind of weird. I have an album, a classical record made by Handel that does harmonica, something Ben Franklin made that basically sounds like a theremin.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you play it with a glass. I liked it because it had this lore that it made people crazy because of the frequencies. But it made people crazy because it was a glass that revolved around water. And it's basically like playing a wine glass.
Oh, the
you know?
Woo kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. But it had these different pitches. It would look like a cone, but it would be sitting around with dipping in water. But what made people really crazy was because it was made out of lead. You know.
With your records, would you consider yourself a pretty avid record collector?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Very, 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 very eclectic taste I've got, yeah.
Do you actively search for records while you're touring around the world, spending time in different record shops?
I don't, actually. But I will pop into a record shop. It's just so hard to put it in my suitcase. and I'll make a mental note of it, and then when I get home, I'll buy the records.
Do you concern yourself with matters like if it's a first pressing or anything like that, or is it just you grab whatever's convenient and closest, and that's fine for you?
Yeah, whatever's convenient and closest, you know. And I do like you know, the immediacy of digital, where I could just listen to it on my phone, and you know, my curiosity will peak, and I'll just buy the record right there on the spot and start enjoying it.
Are you a completist in the sense of, you know, your favorite artists, you have not only their good work but their shitty albums too?
Yes, I want to hear the whole thought. Generally, I won't buy the greatest hits just yet, you know. Or I'll make my own greatest list for greatest hits from a playlist after I've rifled through this stuff.
Who are some of the more modern artists that you're listening to these days?
Hardly any. Mm-hmm. I know I sound like a curmudgeon, but I've really never did it in the past. It's just because I'm into the history of it, really, and I don't know. I'm just afraid, but I don't know. I think in my theory, if you want to be different, you'd delve into the history and interpret it as your own. Mm-hmm. And also the history you'll find out that it's already been done. And that's one of the things I do, is just respect other people, you know, like Hendrix did his thing, leave it alone, you know, do something else. Jimmy Page did his own thing, leave it alone. Other guitar, you know, these unique guitar players did it themselves, leave it alone. Eddie Van Halen, I can't do that. So run away from that one. Yeah.
Who are the guitarists that you most wanted to emulate when you were starting out?
I like the sonics of Hendrix. In the beginning, I would listen for more sonics than riffs. But I still enjoy George Harrison for his, you know, he's there and he's not there. You know what I mean? It's like Score Home, where, you know, why am I feeling this way? What's going on? And they go, oh, it's the music. It's the music that has a big part in it, you know?
You know, I totally agree.
Those kind of players.
One of the biggest crimes in music is that George Harrison was paired with Lennon McCartney. Otherwise, he had to live in their shadow for so long. Had he not had that, he could have blossomed into, you know, this completely different artist.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, he did what he had to do, and he did it well.
Yeah, no one's counting that against him necessarily.
I know.
Do you listen to any modern guitarists, any current?
Yeah, no, the modern guitar player I have to give kudos to. Tom Morello is a really, really, really modern player. You know, he took that guitar to another level of being modern and not sounding like an oldie fogey, you know, doing blues and stuff. He really, you know, he turns into a turntable and all that stuff. And I admire him for that a lot. I think he's one of the most innovative modern guitar players out there.
Now, having 30 years in the band and continuing to evolve as a music fan and as a musician, do you look back at some of the catalog you've created with Pixies and think to yourself, wow, I'd like to have another crack at this song, or is there a correction or something you'd like to redo at some point?
No. It's just because it sounds unique and it just captured who I was at the time, who we were at the time. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and shit, people like it. I'm not going to, you know, redo it. But no, not at all. They're all pretty well orchestrated. You know, those notes were hard to find.
Now, people who are getting into Pixies in the last 10 years or so, it's hard to understand how important they were and how different the sound was to what was happening. And sonically, the early records still sound absolutely brilliant, very different than what was being recorded at the time. Did you guys have an appreciation for how different, how unique it was?
We couldn't really tell. You know, all we knew was, like, we were just being ourselves. That's it. I mean, it could have easily turned out that people didn't like it, you know. Mm-hmm. But we worked really hard at it. I mean, we worked hard at making this right. Yeah, we take it very, very seriously.
It seems that from the beginning, tension within the band was also very important to that mixture. Do you think that was integral to the sound early on?
God, well, you know, we would have preferred not to have tension, but the tension.
Well, sometimes artistic tension isn't so bad. You get the push and the pull, and you know, it makes everyone a bit sharper. And so, I mean, obviously, it could go very badly too, but a certain level of creative tension, I think, is pretty common and often necessary in a band's growth. Yeah.
Oh well, sure, you know, but sometimes it doesn't have to be within the band. It could be outside your life too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could find tension right now if I wanted to. You know. You know, if I think about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But tension is inherent on what you're making anyway. There's going to be tension regardless. That whoever you're with or whoever I'm with, it's going to be, or all of us, there is going to be that tension of this is what you want, you know, or this is, you know, you have a vision and you want it, you know, and the tension is sometimes just very internal in that way. Mm-hmm. But, you do need tension in everything, you know, a building wouldn't hold up, you know, and, I like what, I think Prince said it, you know, if you're having fun making music, you're doing it wrong, you know. Someone said that. I don't know if a Prince said that. Maybe because I'm in Minnesota, I'm just like channeling him.
Well, that's fine. He can't deny it anymore anyway. So, okay, we'll attribute that to him. So 2018's coming. You've got shows booked out through the end of 2017. What's on the docket for 2018?
We're starting to put a record together.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's great news.
Yeah, so we're going to definitely record in 2018.
Mm.
And you know, probably tour some more because this is what we like to do.
So the band seems to be getting along extremely well and making lots of long-term plans together. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Definitely.
So, Joey, thank you so much for spending time with us here on The Vinyl Guide. We really do appreciate it. Thank you for your honesty and your openness to talk about the records and music and the history of Pixies and everything else. I would encourage people to go see Pixies on their current U.S. tour. However, most of the tickets are sold out. So for the shows that are still available, you can check them out at facebook.com/PixiesOfficial or pixiesmusic.com. Pick up a copy of Head Carrier. It's out there, and it sounds like there's going to be a potentially new album in 2018, which we look forward to. And Joey, thank you so much for doing what you're doing. We look forward to hearing more from Pixies and yourself.
Well, thanks for having me, mate.
It's all good.
love that song and such a great album. That's just one track. That's just the beginning. All right. You had a whole rest of the album after that. So if you like that, you definitely need to pick up a copy of the Pixies LP Head Carrier, available now. And of course, it's on vinyl. All right, there we go. That's this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Make sure you download the Vinyl Guide apps. They're the easiest way to be able to listen to this podcast. You can find them on iTunes or the Apple App Store and the Google Play App Store. Just search for The Vinyl Guide and you'll find them. They're totally free. They're totally fun. The easiest way to be able to listen to this podcast. Of course, I'm on Patreon. If you feel like supporting the show, go to patreon.com/vinylguide. You can send me a few bucks. And I always like hearing from you guys. You can always email me, nate@thevinylguide.com. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. So until then, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.